The Hundred Days by Patrick O'Brien, read by Robert Hardy. The sudden rearmament that followed Napoleon's escape from Elba had done little to thin the ranks of unemployed sea officers by the early spring of 1815. A man of war stripped and laid up cannot be made ready for sea in a matter of weeks, and the best vantage points in Gibraltar were now crowded with gentlemen on half pay who'd gathered to watch the long-expected arrival of Commodore Aubrey's squadron from Madeira, recalled in haste from what was ostensibly an expedition to survey the coasts of Chile. The squadron would do something to refurnish the great bare stretch of water inside the mole, an extraordinary nakedness emphasized by the presence of a few hulks, the Royal Sovereign wearing the flag of the Commander-in-Chief, and a couple of lonely 74s. It was a beautiful day, with a slight but favourable breeze at last, and all eyes were fixed upon the middle distance where the squadron had come about on the starboard tack. Among the watchers were two elderly naval lieutenants, who could no longer bear the English climate, and who found that £127.15 a year went much farther here. "The breeze is veering again," said the first. "It'll be abaft the beam directly. They'll be in on this leg, sure. In at last, poor souls. Brisset's kept them hanging about in Funchal until they'd almost grounded on their own beef bones. She was always overmasted. And I cannot congratulate her on that botched-together bowsprit. Marsham has always oversteved his bowsprits. Nor on her new foretopmast. Her bosun must have died. Brisset's surprise, she must have been called back into service. Pomone wearing Commodore Jack Aubrey's broad pennant. Dover, Ganymede. Dover was fitted as a troop ship, and now she's changing herself back into a frigate. What a shambles. The breeze came aft, and the whole squadron flashed out studding sails, a glorious sight. Yet now the current was against them, and in spite of their fine spread of canvas, they made but little headway. Presently, Lieutenant John Arrowsmith, 2 months senior to his friend Thomas Edwards, said, "D'you see Surprise start her stunsail sheet not to outrun her station? Aye, she was always a wonderfully swift sailor, and now they've done her proud. Webster saw her in Sepping's yard where they were fitting her out regardless, fitting her for a hydrographical voyage. Ah, lovely little craft." Presently, Arrowsmith clapped his glass to and said, "Did you ever meet Dr. Maturin?" "I don't know that I did. A very clever doctor, they say, called in to treat Prince William. Always sails with Jack Aubrey. That's the man. Well, he has a wife. They live with the Aubreys at his big place in Dorset. But, of course, you know it, being a Dorset man. Yes, welcome. I've been to one or two of the Blackstones' meets there, and we used to see Mrs. Aubrey and Mrs. Maturin at the Dorchester Assembly. Mrs. Maturin breeds Arabs, a very good horsewoman." "Well, so they said. But you know a place called Maiden Oscott?" "Only too well, with its damned awkward bridge. It seems she pitched over the whole shooting match, coach, horses and all, right down into the river. And only the groom was brought out alive." "Oh, my God!" cried Edwards, and after a pause, "My wife disliked her. But she was a beautiful woman. God rest her. I doubt I ever see her like again." As the squadron drew inshore, the watching crowd increased. Edwards caught sight of his friend's daughters pushing through the crowd. "Oh, Papa," cried the elder girl, "which is the Surprise?" "The second in the line, my dear," for the young lady trained her father's telescope on the Surprise. "Is that the famous Captain Aubrey?" she asked. "Why? He's short, fat, and red-faced. I am disappointed." "No, booby," said her father. "The Commodore's aboard the pennant ship, Pomone. Don't you see the broad pennant, eh?" "Oh, yes, sir, I see it," she replied, training her glass on Pomone's quarter-deck. "Who is the very tall, fair-haired man wearing a rare admiral's uniform?" "Why, Lizzie, that is your famous Jack Aubrey." "Oh, isn't he beautiful? Molly Butler had a coloured engraving of him boarding the Torgood, sword in hand, and the great girls at school—" What the great girls said was lost in the Pomone's 17-gun salute to the Commander-in-Chief, Lord Keith. The echo of the last report had not disappeared before—
Sample complete. Ready to continue?